We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon...
Remember that? I'm sure you do if you're anywhere over like 25. That was October 3rd, 1995. That was the day the verdict came down in the O.J. Simpson case, a case that was watched around the country, if not around the world. And what an incredible experience that was for people to live through and go through. I'm Paul Lisnick. You're listening to The Lisa Dent Show. I'm in for Lisa until 6 o'clock tonight. Thank you for joining us. I, of course, you typically watch on WGN-TV, the WGN-TV Political Report on Sunday morning. But today, we get to be at the radio microphone. Thank you, Lisa. And joining me now is one of the jury consultants who picked the jury, selected that jury in the O.J. Simpson case. That's not the only case he's worked in. He's worked in the Phil Spector case. You might be watching the four-part special on Showtime that's airing right now, the Casey Anthony case, the Tot-Mom case you might be familiar with. And all of his life's exploits are set out in a book called Acquittal. And depending on where you live, if you're in the Chicago area, you might have been in the audience just last week when his book became a play called True Crime, An Inquest. My guest and longtime good friend, Richard Gabriel, joins us from Los Angeles. Richard, happy Thanksgiving weekend to you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Paul. Good to be with you.
And so let's start off, because people, jury consultant, trial consultant, what? I thought it was Johnny Cochran. So explain for our listeners, who, by the way, can call in and ask you questions, or just send a text. I'll read the text, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What exactly do you do that the lawyers don't?
Well, Paul, I think a lot of people don't understand that lawyers spend all their time really trying to put down together the evidence in the case and also trying to wade through really complex legal issues that they've got to present the case. But a lot of times, we as trial consultants try to understand the human factor. It's the psychology of both how jurors best make decisions in the case and how that sometimes differs from how judges and lawyers actually do. So we will do mock trials, we'll do focus groups, we'll help them prepare witnesses to communicate more effectively to the jury, we'll help pick a jury to understand how jurors' biases and life experiences may affect how they listen to the case and interpret the evidence. These are the things that we do to help an attorney basically advocate for their clients and get the best possible result.
So when your company, which is called Decision Analysis, gets a call, and although you're based in L.A., you have offices in San Francisco and many places, you do work around the country. But what do you say? The reason I played the O.J. clip coming in is because you know as well as me, there are a lot of people who, when that trial happened, just said, he did it. He did it. So, well, you know, this is just a guilty man walking free. And then they'll look at you. You were part of picking the jury, and they want to put it on you. What do you say to those people that say, sometimes these guilty people, I think they're walking free?
Understand. And it is an understandable reaction. The thing that's been interesting, especially since O.J. Simpson case, is that we as the public have become much more aware of and even involved in these verdicts. So they feel like we're the jury at home watching these cases and making decisions. But we're actually only getting a portion of actually the evidence that's being presented in the case. We're getting a lot of headlines. We're getting a lot of opinion from pundits. But we're not getting all the evidence. And we're certainly not being tasked with what the jury is being looked at, which is the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And in, especially in the O.J. Simpson case, you have to understand that jurors all come to it with different life experiences. And in that case, especially post the Rodney King verdicts and the riots, the jury in that case, predominantly black, really had a different perspective on police conduct and how they investigated that case and whether they may or may not have planted evidence. And that raised reasonable doubt for them. So I always tell people, until you are sitting in the juror's actual shoes, looking at what they're looking, and also with their own life experiences, it's hard to judge them because they're the ones really on the spot judging the case.
And of course, in full disclosure, you and I are partners in jury consulting, have been for years, so we worked in O.J. together for a period of time. My question is, so he gets acquitted in downtown Los Angeles, which is where that trial was. Had that trial been tried in another county, or in Brentwood or something? I mean, is it possible that the same evidence presented to a jury in a different place gets a different result?
That's absolutely true. I mean, and I think as we've seen, there was clearly a racial divide in that case, and we saw it all over the country just with the reactions to that case. And it's because the fundamental experiences of black citizens and white citizens and their experience of the police and how they saw the evidence in the case was fundamentally different. And that's where, you know, we as jury consultants or as trial consultants really have to evaluate what's the venue that we're going to be in, who are the people in the venue, what is their life experiences, because that really determines how they're going to interpret the evidence in any given case.
And what some people may forget, back during that case, that was sort of the case that put DNA on the map, right? It's when we all heard about it. But we learned that the LAPD wrapped Nicole Brown Simpson, the ex-wife of O.J. who was killed, murdered. They wrapped her in a blanket, destroying the DNA. There was other evidence that was to be put in a refrigerated truck. Refrigerated truck broken. So do you also think that in a case, even if your gut tells you this person is guilty, but the law enforcement part has messed up how they're handling evidence, is the right answer that sometimes maybe a guilty person, I'm not saying he was, I don't know, but that a guilty person should go free if that's what happens on the prosecution end?
Well, this is one of the fundamental challenges that we have in our system, which is whether a guilty person may go free given that the prosecution has not met their burden of proof, or whether we should be convicting innocent people who we're not sure about on this. And it's, you know, unfortunately these days we've gotten to the point where justice really seems to be a synonym for conviction. And it's very easy for us to take a look at these cases in very black and white terms. And it's always easier to say, well, if I have this kind of suspicion, or if I feel like he might have done it, let's just be better to save caution and convict him. And that's really not the standard of proof here. That's what we call a civil preponderance of evidence thing, more likely than not, as opposed to what a criminal standard is, which is a very high burden, which is in order to send somebody to jail for a significant period of time, you really have to be pretty certain beyond a reasonable doubt. And so that's really what the conundrum is. And for us in the population, we do get scared. We do think, wow, how could this be? That can't be justice. And yet we have this system because a lot of innocent people have been convicted. The Innocence Project itself has exonerated some almost 400 people who have been wrongfully convicted because sometimes the standard hasn't been met. So it is a tension that we in the justice system have to constantly deal with. You know, even if somebody thinks, may it be that's true, has the prosecution really met their burden of proof?
And we're going to take a break in just a moment, but have you ever had a case, like some people probably think this, that whether it's O.J. Simpson or Phil Spector or Casey Anthony, that they look at you and say, I did it. Just get me out of this, but I did it. Are those questions ever discussed with the trial team, or did Johnny Cochran maybe never really knew what happened with O.J. because that's not his job?
Well, if there's an ethical obligation, in other words, if an attorney or even myself, if somebody says that we can't misrepresent that.
Ah.
So usually defendants do not tell them, and they're cautioned, look, you know, I just need to know from you what you think. But they are cautioned, if you say, you know, you did it, then I can't represent to the court that you're innocent, because I know you've told me that you can't. So there is an ethical obligation. There's some real rules about what an attorney and or, you know, I think a consultant can do in a situation where the thing. So typically that is not discussed. Usually the client will say either, yes, I did do it, but I didn't do it the way the prosecution says, in which case you can go into a plea agreement and the attorneys can negotiate a plea agreement for, perhaps a prison term. But if they say they didn't do it, then you have to represent them as such.
Gotcha. My guest is nationally respected jury and trial consultant Richard Gabriel, the author of the book Acquittal and now the new play True Crime, An Inquest. We're going to take a break. If you have questions for Richard or a text, you just want to text him, I'll read it for you, 312-981-7200. And when we come back after this break, I'm going to ask Richard if Donald Trump should get indicted. I don't know if that's going to happen, but if it does, can a fair and impartial jury actually be picked? Do such jurors exist? We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to 720 WGN. And I continue my conversation with jury expert and trial consultant expert Richard Gabriel. This is Paul Lisnick from WGN-TV sitting in for Lisa Dent today. And as I promised our listeners, Richard, that when we came back after this break, I wanted to ask a bit about, you know, there's lots of talk whether former President Trump can be indicted. And if he is, I mean, you have to ask the question, there's nobody in this country, maybe in the planet, who doesn't know who Donald Trump is and who doesn't have feelings about him. So should there be a trial someday? Can you get a fair and impartial jury?
Here's the thing. I think there's a big distinction between whether a jury can be fair and whether they can be impartial. I don't believe anybody in this country, for the most part, can be impartial when it comes to Donald Trump. Everybody has fairly strong opinions about him. There may be some jurors out there who somehow don't have any feelings, but he has been such a polarizing figure in our for the last, you know, it's been now 6 years and even before that. And so I think in terms of impartiality, and this applies to actually how we deal with most high profile cases, jurors do come to trials with lots of feelings, lots of experiences about stuff. And it's not adequate to try and tell them to just set it all aside. So you have to then deal with it and try and figure out, well, given your feelings, how are you going to deal with those when you're actually viewing evidence? As we've seen in the OJ and the Casey Anthony case, there are cases, people who actually do come to the trial thinking the defendant is guilty, but are able to kind of go, now that I'm listening and I'm hearing both sides, I have questions, I have some different thoughts. So people have the ability to be fair, I believe, even sometimes when it may be difficult for them to be impartial.
And, of course, the bottom line, I suppose, is that you don't actually select jurors. You don't get to say, I like that lady and that guy will keep them. It's really quite the opposite.
Right. Jury selection is really jury deselection. You are identifying jurors who clearly have such a prevailing bias or such strong feelings or experiences that they're really not going to be able to objectively listen to the evidence. And then you're trying to get rid of them through either two ways. One is through a cause challenge in which the judge says, yeah, I think you meet the standard. You can't be fair and impartial, so therefore I'm going to dismiss you. Or through the use of peremptory strikes in which each of the sides gets to use to eliminate those jurors. And hopefully you end up with a jury in the middle that can be at least neutral or objective in viewing the evidence.
What do you say when people say, you know what, sometimes the justice system, it just doesn't deliver justice?
Well, I think it depends on how you define justice. I think that it delivers a kind of justice. Unfortunately, as I say before, justice for us has kind of become synonymous with just conviction. You know, somebody gets accused of something, and even though it is the prosecution's burden to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, for the most part, jurors believe that, you know what, if you're not here as a defendant, you probably did something wrong. And as a result, you better prove to me that you didn't do wrong. So the burden of proof is usually emotionally or psychologically on the defendant. So that's where justice system doesn't quite meet the definition of justice. And also the justice system sometimes, it does well when it's about blame and punishment. But oftentimes it doesn't capture the human stories that sometimes are behind some of these very troubling, difficult, and even cases which are true mysteries. The Casey Anthony case, the Phil Spector case, have some real whodunit, some real head-scratching issues in there that go beyond some of the obvious things that you kind of go, well, seems obvious to me.
Right, and that's why you took those cases and worked them into the new play True Crime and Inquest, which is in works right now, which I know is presented here at Northwestern. The book is called Acquittal. Richard, I wish we had another hour to do this, but people that want to learn more about you can, I guess, the website decisionanalysisinc.com, right?
That's absolutely true.
All right. My good friend Richard Gabriel, a noted trial consultant, he's among the best of them. Check him out at his website. Check out his book, Acquittal. I wish you a great holiday weekend, my friend. Thank you for your time today on WGN.
You too, Paul.